Yeah, hi, Rob. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How's yourself?
I'm pretty good, thanks. I'm recovering from jet lag slowly.
Yes, well, that's what happens when you travel to the other side of the world and become acclimatized. So what's your impressions on the New Zealand leg of the filming?
Once again, absolutely amazed by the wonderful scenic values and light values that you have in New Zealand. It's a wonderful place to film for location work. Of course, you do have a problem of not having any really good studios and that sort of facilities. But, I mean, it's incredible to me because you have some of the best locations in the world, if not the best locations in the world. You have some of the best crews I've ever encountered in the world, some of the best artisans and technicians. And yet you haven't got any facilities to really back them up properly, which is a bit of a shame.
Yes, and may cause a bit of a problem for Voyager the Dawn Treader, because I know the Aussies are after that with their big water team.
Well, they're not the only people. I mean, quite a few people are after the next movie. We'll just have to wait and see what works the best. I mean, it's a simple matter, really, of where the best facilities are, the best deals are, is where you make your movies these days.
Well, I remember we were sat down as a family and watched one of the documentaries on the Narnian, the Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe DVD.
Right.
And, of course, I mean, you're all over the world there. One of the things Andrew Adamson talks about is, you know, he's filming in this location, got the water tank in that location. We did this over in this country, and it's almost an international effort, isn't it?
The bulk of the work was actually done in New Zealand on Lion Witch.
Mm.
Small parts of it were done elsewhere, obviously, but yeah, the bulk of it was done in New Zealand under pretty adverse conditions in some circumstances. I mean, we were shooting in, I suppose there were semi-converted aircraft hangars at Hobsonville, for example.
Yes.
And every time the rain got heavy, we had to stop because you couldn't hear yourself think. You know, it just wasn't a good way to try to make a movie. The great skill of the crews and the people that we worked with in New Zealand was so good, we were able to make a fabulous movie.
A terrific movie. The locations this year, including down the west coast of the South Island, that's a bit rugged.
Yes, you're not kidding. It was a wonderful place to be and a wonderful place to experience, but we did get a bit of interesting New Zealand summer weather down there at times. But yeah, no, it's a lovely area, absolutely beautiful. I love being there.
To us, it'd be similar to the northeast coast of England?
Yeah, I guess a bit, yeah. It's probably even more precipitate in the alpine areas of New Zealand. It's a fabulous, fabulous area.
Well, I'm trying
to imagine it must be pretty grim in the winter down there.
Well,
I mean, the summer's not that great at times.
We'll edit that bit out for our greymouth listeners, shall we?
Yeah, okay.
You were filming down in Cathedral Cove, weren't you?
Yeah, the Cathedral Cove, down the beach there for a while. And that was a very, very beautiful set. We had several sets there, actually, but it was absolutely lovely. And the weather was very kind to us there, too, which helped enormously.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got some great footage there. Lovely, lovely part of the world.
One of the things with the whole Narnian Chronicles is you've got this ongoing thing with the children. Is that going to prove to be problematic in the future?
You mean the children growing up?
Yeah.
Well, not really. You see, in the next movie after Prince Caspian, in Prince Caspian, Lion Witch, we had all four children. Prince Caspian, we had all four children. And in Prince Caspian, they are about a year to 18 months older than they were in The Lion, the Witch.
Yep.
And that works for us in the sense that the children have grown up a little bit. In fact, they've grown up more than their characters have. So we just, with makeup and so forth, make them look a little bit younger. But it works for us in that they are more mature. And then in the next movie, which will come after Prince Caspian, of course, they're another year or two older again, and we have two of the same children back again. So they will be considerably older, which will work for the next movie. And then, of course, we lose that cast because they don't reappear until they're adults in the last battle.
That's right.
So by the time we get round to filming that, they probably will be adults and we'll be able to use them again.
Now, that's where my reading must be wrong, because I peg the Voyage of the Dawn Treader as almost hard on the heels of Caspian.
It is, yes. But in this Earth time, I think it's about a year or a bit later, maybe 18 months later.
All right.
Peter goes off to the professor to be tutored because he's not doing very well at school. Susan goes off to America with the parents, and Edmund and Lucy are sent off to their aunt and uncle's house, Bertha and Harold.
That's where they meet Eustace.
So I think this is about a year or 2 years, maybe even 2 years later.
Are we going to expect a similar gap then between this movie and the next movie?
We hope to get the next three or four done quite quickly. Certainly the next two we'd hope to get done quite quickly. We'd like to keep the continuity rolling as fast as possible. I would personally like to see probably no more than a year or 18 months between movies.
And you'd be looking at using Andrew for all of them?
Andrew's not going to direct the next one. I think he's realized that it's time he took a break. I think probably he has devoted so much time to us, we would be very remiss to ask him to do it again. I don't think his wife would be very pleased if he had to take off for another 2 years to make a movie. Far parts of the world and so on. But in any case, I think it'll probably be good for Andrew and probably good for us to change a little bit of style here and there.
Yeah, it does. I was thinking about that. I mean, the comparison between Narnia and Middle Earth, it will always come about now. But I was just thinking that with the discussion over The Hobbit, and I sat down for a while with myself and I thought, you know, I don't really know if I want The Hobbit to look like Lord of the Rings. It's a totally different feel.
Yeah, well, it was, of course, The Hobbit is very different in many ways. It was written as a children's book to start with, whereas The Lord of the Rings wasn't.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think it should look very different. I think it should have a totally different feel about it myself. I think that's true of some of our books as well, in that The Dawn Treader has to have a very different feel from anything we've done to date, because
yes.
It takes place in an entirely different part of the world of Narnia, and a different kind of adventure as well.
It's a very swashbuckling adventure.
A little bit more that way, certainly. It's a little bit more cerebral in some ways, too.
You're looking at the moment, I noticed one of the things, hunting through Narnia Web, looking for horse riders in the Czech Republic.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll find plenty of them.
Yeah.
There's quite a lot of cavalry work to be done in this movie.
Now, see, that's the thing. Again, with Andrew talking about when he came to think about making The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, he wrote down his memories first and then read the book again. And I can't remember too many places in Prince Caspian that call for lots of horses.
Well, of course, we've had to amplify things a little bit. What you can do in a book very often won't work on the screen. A lot of Prince Caspian is walking and talking, which is fine on the pages of the book, but doesn't really come across very well in the cinema. So there are things we've had to do to make things a little more lively. But you realize, of course, that there is the horse Destria in the book, which was ridden by Caspian in his flight from Miraz's castle.
Yes.
And he was pursued by a horseman, no doubt. So the Telmarine army will have to have some cavalry attached to it.
Well, that's a good point, I suppose. I better go back and reread the book.
Well, we're working to make this movie as exciting and as delightful as possible.
One of the other things that, if I remember from Caspian, is Bacchus and the nymphs and all the wood elves and sort of and those sorts of things. Have I got the book right?
You've got the right book, yeah.
How does that fit with you from a Christian point of view? Because for some of us, I mean, we know C.S. Lewis was a Christian. I mean, Kathy Jenke, our co-host on The Breakfast Show, is just reading Mere Christianity at the moment and enjoying having her brain turned on again. But how does some of those things fit into the Christian world from your point of view?
Well, I think the first thing one has to realize is the nature of myth. Myth itself and the myth that evolved in the ancient Greek and ancient Roman civilizations were the outreaching, the sort of groping of men for explanations of the wonders of creation. When these people saw that when they put grain in the ground, it grew and it produced a crop and so forth, and they saw the great fruits on the trees and all of this kind of thing, and they searched out, they looked out and tried to find some kind of explaining how this was coming about, how it was happening. And they came up with all kinds of explanations, with supernatural overtones, of course, which is inevitable, which was their way of groping toward God. Of course, the true myth, the Christian myth, is when God himself came to reveal himself to us. But in a Narnian context, all of these demigods, if you like, or mythological sort of semi-godlet type creatures like Bacchus and Silenus and others, they are all under the power and under the rule of Aslan himself. I think that puts them in their perspective in a Narnian way.
Because it's a whole different world for us today with those sorts of things. So we haven't grown up with the same literature as was around.
It's very true, and it's a great shame because so many people look at the mythological characters and immediately think that they're all demonic, which is complete nonsense. They were the early man's groping for God, not finding him very successfully, but doing the best he could under the circumstances. In fact, the Book of Romans makes it quite plain that if a man grows up on a lush island somewhere and never hears the name of God or the word of God or the name of Jesus or anything like that, but he doesn't pay homage to some being as a result of reveling in the glory of the creation around him, he is without excuse. So God expects and demands that we pay homage to something if we never hear the name of God.
It's a good point. That's Paul goes right through that in the beginning of Romans, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Is there a Christian element to the movies apart from the original book?
Apart from the original book? I would say probably not. One of the temptations I have to fight against quite strongly at times is the temptation to inject some of my own Christian faith into the screenplays and the movies that we do. That would be a very wrong thing to do. The right way to do these movies is to stick to what Jack said in the original book, Jack's original intentions and Jack's original meanings as closely as we can, and incorporate them into our film scripts and so forth, our screenplays. To do anything more, I think, would be the wrong thing to do. So no, what you will find in Prince Caspian is the same messages that Jack was teaching in Prince Caspian, only translated to film.
Speaking of Jack's books, we mentioned Mere Christianity before. One of the things that Kathy was saying in reading it is she's got to reread paragraphs and reread chapters because we're not used to receiving that sort of information today, yeah, in that sort of a way. We're much more used to being entertained.
Well, yes, I think you have a point there, but I think that's a sad reflection on modern education.
Agreed. But even for mature Christians, we're not ready to receive that. We like to be entertained in our messages.
Yes, and I think that's completely the wrong way to look at it. I don't think Christianity is supposed to be a medium of entertainment. I think Christianity is supposed to be something you do, not something you, you're entertained by. In fact, I take issue with an awful lot of churches who make Christianity, as they see it, a performance. They make their worship a performance. The worship of Jesus Christ should be enacted in every minute of every day of our lives. We should be doing Christianity, not just shouting and yelling and talking about it.
When did you discover that for yourself?
I discovered that relatively late in life. I was in my 40s, and my problem had always been, although I believed in God and believed in Jesus, so does the devil, of course, and doesn't make him a Christian, I didn't want to submit my life to the authority of anyone but myself. Therefore, in a sense, I was worshipping myself, and therefore I had a fool for a deity. But I eventually did come to the realization that I am not qualified to run a human life, at least of all one as complex as my own. So I handed it over to someone who, of course, is the person who made it.
That's the best thing for all of us to do.
Of course, of course.
Again, in watching the documentary on The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, Andrew talks about the number of CGI shots, which I think was around 1,500 for that. Are we looking at more? The whole Lord of the Rings thing, every movie got more and more and more and more. I'm sure that you're hoping that doesn't happen with these ones.
Well, of course, one has to be a bit careful for budget reasons. But we do have some new and interesting CGI characters we have to deal with in Prince Caspian, of course. And I'm sure everybody in the world who's ever read the book is looking forward to meeting Reepicheep.
Absolutely.
Example. So there will be quite a few CGI shots in this movie. I'm not going to give too much away, though.
No. But those that have seen the show reel are very impressed with it, from what I've read.
I believe so, indeed, yeah.
Well, we will count down another year and a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got till, yeah, just over a year, actually. May of next year it should come out. We have a pretty steep hill to climb, and we've got to get up it pretty fast.
Well, we're always here if you need us.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But I will have to tell you this, though. Once again, going back to New Zealand and meeting up with a lot of the same crews who helped, the crew members who helped us on the Lion Witch and so forth, was an absolute delight. I mean, you do have some of the best crews I've encountered anywhere. Great plasterers, great painters, and all of the people who work so hard behind the scenes. And I really am very grateful to them for all their work. And they know who they are. If they hear this program, they'll know who I'm talking about. Great guys, great girls. They did a wonderful job for us in Lion Witch, and they've done it again on Prince Caspian. And they deserve every credit we can give them.
Hey, Doug, thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome, Rob.